this just in a blockbuster five-piece trade, Max Wiener has been traded to the Chicago Cubs. Max, what is good?
Go Cubs go, baby. At least I don't have to be on the White Sox anymore. But hey, everybody, welcome to the Pressing Coverage Podcast, the podcast that is so hot that Kevin Durant would sign with us.
Woo!
So got a little something different here, just open up the pod day. So Mason, I'm going to put you on the spot right now. Little curveball icebreaker question. You ready for this? You ready?
Yeah, I'm up to bat. I'm ready.
All right, so Mason, enter scene. You are in a karaoke bar, and okay. A robber comes in and puts a gun to your head, and you have to pick one song to have the most inspiring karaoke performance, or the robber's going to kill you. What's your song?
Creep by Radiohead.
Wow, that... Oh, okay.
No, I'm totally kidding, no. It is a high-risk, high-reward type karaoke song, though. No, I would probably go with... If I'm going for inspired... Ooh, that's a tough question. Like, because I feel like my best karaoke song is probably... Hurt by Johnny Cash.
Great choice.
Yeah, but I'm going for inspired. I'm probably going with Mamma Mia. No. I'm going with Stayin' Alive by the Bee Gees, because I can maybe hit those high notes.
The only issue is the robber might take offense that you're singing Stayin' Alive.
It's ironic as well. I mean, you know.
Okay.
That's a good. What about you, Max? What would your answer be?
So I think my personal choice would be Beast of Burden by the Rolling Stones, but maybe if I'm feeling a little adventurous, maybe if I'm going out on a limb and want to do a little gender bender action, I'd go with the Game of Love by Santana.
Oh, wow.
Great song.
I was contemplating Eclipse of the Heart by Bonnie Ross, but ooh. I decided not to. It's just too long.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can't have too long of a karaoke song, or it just doesn't work. Yeah. People get all tired of it.
So, now, moving on to the actual podcast, so let's talk about something big that happened today. Jose Quintana of the White Sox got traded from across town to the Chicago Cubs. Max, who got sent where? What did the Cubs have to give up here?
So, to break down this, the first hot trade of the trade season, because the deadline is at the end of the month, so the stove is now officially on. It is what you may say is lit. So the Cubs acquired the stud lefty from the White Sox, Jose Quintana, who's kind of having an off year this year. He has a 4.49 ERA over 104 innings, but to acquire him, the Cubs had to send to the White Sox four players: first baseman Matt Rose, an infielder Bryant Fleet, a left-handed pitcher Dylan Cess, Cess is a right-handed pitcher, and finally they had to send the crown jewel of their farm system and of, honestly, you could argue of the MLB, Eloy Jimenez.
Well, I mean, he's no. So they now have Moncada and Jimenez.
Yes, they. I was reading that the White Sox currently own 9% of the top 100 prospects in the MLB.
Oh wow. So, who do you think this trade really benefits?
So, honestly, I think this is a very fair trade for both sides right now. So, okay. Firstly, the Cubs, they have good starting pitching. They have Lester. He has been solid, rock solid for them. But other than that, really, there's been a drop off. Hendricks has not been the pitcher that he once was. Usually he does drop off in the second half, but he has been hurt most of this first half, so he has not been that helpful. Lackey has been all right, and then Jake Arrieta has not been the stud that he has previously been. So this
he's having a tough season.
Yeah, for sure. Which
for his level that he sets for himself, yeah.
Which I don't know if that is because he's actually regressing, or is he just having an off year? He has a 4.35 ERA currently through 101 innings. Yeah.
It seems like him and Quintana are having the same season.
Yeah, but the reason I like this trade is in my preseason write up of who I think is going to have an off season, I said Quintana because I don't think Jose is an ace. He is not that guy who, if you have to get a win, and he is the person, the only person you have to send out there, I don't think he's that guy. He is a fantastic number two, but the pressure of being that ace is something special. Only few guys are able to be, to know you're the guy who, if you've lost four games in a row and you're next up in the rotation, your team 100% expects you to get that W and lead them to a win. And I don't think Jose, with that added pressure, was able to perform at his normal level, because his ERA for the season is over a point higher than his career of 3.51.
Well, let me ask you this. Like, you're not saying that he doesn't have the stuff. Like, I think he has the stuff. I think he can be an ace. But are you saying it's more from, like, he just, that mentality? He doesn't have that Chris Sale mentality?
Exactly. Okay. It takes a special breed of player, a Chris Sale.
Arguably a crazy person.
Yes, a
Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, a Kluber, I guess David Price used to, but he really isn't anymore. Just there's so, like, certain guys. Yeah, there's certain guys who they are the best in their rotation, and they know it. Their team knows it. They are their rock. In situations where you 100% need a win, that's a guy you can put out there given the pressure. And I think that to be thrust in this position after being behind Chris Sale for so long, definitely is is doing a detriment to his performance, in my opinion.
So where do you think he's going to fall in the lineup for the Cubs? Because now it's going to be what, Lester, in no particular order, it's what, Lester, Arrieta, Hendricks, Lackey, Quintana?
Yeah, I think that they're going to have a little log jam now. The Cubs are probably going to have to move somebody out of the rotation. Who that is, I'm not sure, but he's definitely, I think, going to slot either in number two or number three right now.
Okay.
I think it's hard because Jake has been your guy for years now. So it's hard to knock him off of his where he was. But also Lester has been rock solid for them. He was a one in Boston when he was there. So he is still a top flight pitcher. So I'm going to guess he's going to settle in at the number three in the rotation.
That's a good spot. I was thinking two or three as well. So what? Who's gonna get knocked out? Who's the pitcher? I'm forgetting. There's Lackey, and then there's Hendricks, and who's the other one that I can't remember?
I'm looking at it right now.
Okay.
Mike Montgomery he's kind of just been in and out, but really other than that, they might have a few guys on the DL. It's really hard because Lackey's been hurt right now, and Hendricks has been hurt right now.
Okay.
And so is Brett Anderson, which is he's a
who?
Brett Anderson. He was he used to be on the A's. Right now he's doing terrible this season. He has over an 8 ERA, but he's a career 3.99 pitcher. That's his career ERA. So he is having an off year, but he would probably definitely be moved to the pen. They do have a few guys like Eddie Butler is filling in right now, and he's doing solid. But being able to acquiring Quintana definitely gives them the flexibility to move a guy to the pen as more of the long man and have people who are the premier starters move back into the rotation. So, and then also on the other side, we have the White Sox, who everyone can agree they are 100% trusting the process in rebuilding from the ground up right now, especially with the blockbuster trade of Chris Sale this past summer for the top prospect in baseball, Yoan Moncada. But I think they got a fantastic haul here. Eloy is going to be a stud, and he definitely fits in more of a AL team because his defense is not at the major league level yet. So worst case, he could be a fantastic DH for them because that bat is legit. He is a 20-year-old in high A right now, and he is hitting .271. He has 8 home runs, 32 RBIs. Last season in just A ball, he had 14 home runs and 81 RBIs. He was hitting .329. So he is extremely advanced for his age, so he's going to be a fantastic addition. Dylan Cess has been slotted in the back end of most top 100 prospect lists right now, and he has a career .254 ERA. The only question mark with him is that the most he's ever pitched is this season at 51 innings. So he definitely needs some more time to get used to that long season and being able to pitch 200 innings. And then the other two guys, Matt Rose and Bryant Fleet, are just flyers. They're having solid seasons at their levels, but they really have no good track record of success in the minors, so they're just two lottery tickets. But I think this is a fantastic trade for both sides. They both get what they needed. The Cubs get a starter now and potentially for the future, since they do control Quintana until 2020. And then the White Sox get a lot of pieces to rebuild around for the future.
Yeah, I mean, hey, the only rule is if it works. It's a great book, by the way. Everyone should check that out. So we didn't even come here to talk about baseball, but it kind of just happened that way because one of the league's biggest pitchers got traded today. So we kind of had to talk about it a little bit. But we're really here today to talk about the state of summer movies, both last year and this year, and kind of why summer movies are so important. So, Max, I heard you just saw Baby Driver. What were your thoughts?
I was in love with the movie. From the first scene, which the opening scene of that movie is, you could argue, one of the best opening scenes of movies that I could recently remember. And it just has this feel to it that was so unique. I think I described it to you as combining the Blues Brothers with like a Jason Bourne movie. It was just so...
I wouldn't say Jason Bourne, because it's nowhere near as serious as a Bourne movie.
Like, in the action, in terms of that. Like, the car chases
I would say it's more like you combine Collateral and the Blues Brothers.
Okay. But I loved it. I thought it was a ride the entire time. It sucked me in, and how the soundtrack to the film was just... I don't even know how to describe it. Incorporated, it was synced with the entire
it was clear the movie was shot around the soundtrack, not the other way.
Exactly. And
yeah, and I mean that was just Edgar Wright showing off his taste in music, which I thought was admirable.
Which is it was just fun. It was a fun movie, and I think as we get deeper into the summer movies, that is what a summer movie is. It's just something you can go and have fun with.
Yeah, and what was even, you know, what you didn't mention that was awesome about this film is that it's not like a sequel, it's a new IP. And, you know, Edgar Wright brought his signature energy to it, and it's like, you can tell, like, each director has their own certain things, and, like, you can clearly tell that Edgar Wright had his, you know, hands full in the editing room just putting this together, and it was a lot of fun, yeah. The characters were a lot of fun. Jamie Foxx was awesome. John Hamm might have been my favorite character in the movie. Kevin Spacey is awesome as always. Lily James, she was nice. It was good to see her take on this role, because I'm just used to seeing her as a princess role, even though this is kind of like a... This movie is, in a way, kind of like a fantasy, just because the way that they fall... Spoiler, I guess. Sort of, I guess. But they fall in love really fast, and so there are some of that, like Romeo and Juliet elements in there as well. And we could talk all day and pick apart the movie, but that's not really why we're here. But this movie kind of... incorporates how I feel about the entire summer, both how the slate of summer movies that is coming up, as well as the ones that we've already seen. So this year we've gotten Baby Driver, we've got Spider-Man Homecoming, we've gotten Wonder Woman, we're getting War for the Planet of the Apes, and we're getting Dunkirk. I expect all five of those movies to be highly praised. Baby Driver is already being highly praised, Spider-Man Homecoming already highly praised, Wonder Woman knocked out of the park, War for the Planet of the Apes, I've already heard nothing but good things about that. And with Dunkirk, it's a Christopher Nolan movie, so you know what you're getting. You're getting a Christopher Nolan movie, which 10 times out of 10 is a damn good movie. And so let's compare that to last year. So last year was very underwhelming. The summer movies were, I mean. Yes, La La Land came out, but nobody really picked up on that movie until a couple months later. So we got Ghostbusters, which was very, very – it was hit or miss for most people. I'm really hesitant to talk about that movie because I don't want to be called a misogynist for saying anything bad about it. Because I liked the cast, it just didn't really work for me. Jason Bourne, which was also underwhelming and kind of disappointing just because we thought we were getting like the next best thing after Bourne Ultimatum, and it wasn't really that. It was more of an action movie, which isn't bad. It's just, again, it's not necessarily a Bourne movie. Yes, it has action, but there wasn't that much of a thriller element to it. Suicide Squad, which I enjoyed. I understand the problems with it, but I thought it was a lot of energy and very fun. But again, critics kind of ripped it up and threw it out. Sausage Party, which was an experience, I'll just leave it at that. And then we also got Star Trek Beyond, which I enjoyed, but it did underwhelm at the box office. And you look at this year, though, with Baby Driver, Homecoming, Wonder Woman, Planet of the Apes, and Dunkirk, I'll take all five of those movies over all those movies I just named from last year. And so, Max, what do you think? Do you think that this year is already better for movies, or what?
Yeah, definitely. This year is leagues better than what we got last year. I think it's just very cyclical, like what directors have the availability to get a movie out during this time of the year, what actors and actresses are available. And I think that this summer, the stars aligned and we got all these great franchises, and which three out of the five that we did mention are continuations of franchises or universes. So that also helps it. In fact, that these are very established brands, like a new Spider-Man, Wonder Woman, which is a continuation of the DC universe, and then the final of the three Planet of the Apes movies. So I think that definitely helps it in terms of the fact that these are established franchises that have previous box office success.
Well,
and then with Baby Driver being a surprise new IP.
I think, well, but the problem here, okay, so you say that that's good, but last year Ghostbusters, a franchise, was a reboot. Jason Bourne was a franchise. Suicide Squad, part of the DCEU franchise. Star Trek Beyond franchise. And I just, it's so, I don't know, I don't want to seem lazy when I just say, like, these movies are just better, but they kind of are. And I think it also is important who is behind the camera when this happens, but.
Well, the difference is these are, I would say, only really Spider-Man. It's not even a reboot, it's a new telling. While Ghostbusters was just a gender bender of the original film, and Jason Bourne was a continuation of already a long-running franchise, while Suicide Squad, I would compare it more to what Wonder Woman is, that it's basically universe, but it's not a direct sequel to something. So Star Trek is like War, the Planet of the Apes. But I think that these are more what the ones coming out this year are compared to what they were last year. Like, Jason Bourne, action film. Ghostbusters was a film that was made, what, the 80s, right? Was when it came out?
It was summer of, like, late 80s.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think it's difficult to compare in terms of a franchise standpoint of what's coming out this summer than what came out last summer.
I'm going to disagree with you for a second, because I think the most important thing in movies, and this is going to sound very obvious, is it's the execution. If you make a good movie, you make a good movie. And I just think that I don't know. I literally don't know any other way to say it. Is that these movies have just been better, like leagues better than the ones that came out last summer. And I don't think there's much else to it other than I think we just got either lucky or, like you said before, it is cyclical and that, you know, there are down years and there are high years, down years and high years. But I do want to give a shout out to last summer. Last summer did have two Movie of the Year nominations with La La Land and my personal favorite movie of the year, Hell or High Water. And that came out, I believe, late August. So I don't want to totally just discredit last summer. But, yeah, and because it was disappointing because I think everybody wanted Suicide Squad to be good. And I'm gonna say this might be a take. I don't really think it is, but I think people were ready to hate it, though. I think a lot of the fans wanted it to be good because of how polarizing Batman vs Superman was. And I think a lot of people were just like, oh, DC, ready to write off DC. And then they saw Suicide Squad, not really looking for anything good in it, and then wrote it off. But then between the year span between Suicide Squad and Wonder Woman, everyone was like, all right, DC's kind of on its last legs. We need to root for it. This is kind of an underdog story. With Wonder Woman, we have the first superhero movie that's helmed by a female director and has a female lead. And so everyone was like rising up for Wonder Woman. And that movie was ready to be loved in the way that Suicide Squad was kind of ready to be hated. And so I think that also has something to do with it. With Spider-Man Homecoming, though, I just want to say that movie was just – that cast is damn good. Everything about that movie is phenomenal. I won't spoil it for you, Max, because I know you haven't seen it yet. But that movie – I'll take a slight tangent to the side. I think the two best MCU movies, Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, are Captain America Winter Soldier, which actually does feel like a Bourne movie. It's got a cool conspiracy vibe to it, and it's got some of the best action sequences I've ever seen. and Guardians of the Galaxy, which is a get-the-team-together movie. Spider-Man Homecoming is a high school movie, and it feels like you get that kind of Richard Linklater feel with it, but you also get that, like, John Cusack, Ferris Bueller's Day Off high school vibe to it, even though, yes, there is a shot-for-shot homage to Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And then with Baby Driver, it is an IP directed by one of the best directors working today, and it is at the same time an homage. It's a love letter to, like, movies that are based on, like, you know, Cars, and that seems kind of weird to say out loud, but see the movie, you'll know what I'm talking about. I will say, I loved Baby Driver from start to finish. I don't have a bad thing to say about it. I only wanted one more car chase, and that's just because the other ones were so good in it. That's all I'm going to say about that movie. And Dunkirk, Christopher Nolan movie, it's going to be great. War for the Planet of the Apes is apparently a masterpiece, and those are not my words. Those are words from other reviews I've already looked at, and masterpiece is in 4 of the 5 of those. And it's just it's interesting to me, and I don't know why. I might be the only one that finds this interesting, Max, but why couldn't we get some, like, things being executed like this last year? Where was this last year? Why did everything just happen to just fall apart last year? Because summer is arguably the most important part of the movie cycle, of the movie life cycle. Or, I'm sorry, I wouldn't say life cycle. It's the most important part of the annual calendar for movies.
Yeah, I would say next to Christmas Day, it is the most important time for movie releases. But I don't know. I think, hashing back to your point on execution, I think that is kind of what the conclusion both of us are coming to, is that these movies last year, maybe people thought that they were going to be as good as these movies, and just we happened to get the perfect combination of both cast and direction this year to really elevate these movies from expectation to reality when compared to just a cinematic experience. But again, it could also be circumstances, like you said, with Wonder Woman. But I don't, we don't know. It could just be, it just happened to be the year. But I think that rather than, like, it's great to think, like, can we figure out this perfect formula of why these movies are great? But at the same time, I think we just need to appreciate that we do have these great cinematic experiences that happen to come out near the same time, because throughout the history of cinema, there has been times where great films have come out near each other, and it's made really cool experiences of comparing a certain time to the releases of movies that are iconic to cinema today.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And just like the fact that you said two great movies come out in the same time, that reminded me of No Country for Old Men and There Will Be Blood, which I want to say they came out... Okay, so... There Will Be Blood came out December 26, 2007, and No Country for Old Men came out in on November 9th of 2007. Both, I want to say, were nominated for movie. They were both nominated for movie of the year. I have a weird feeling that they were nominated in different years. I might be wrong on that, but those are two of the best movies of the past decade, and they came out within a month of each other. That's hilarious. But that's just kind of, like, to your point. Of, yeah, is it random, or is it just the way that all the directors work? Are they just on, like, they start at the same time, while, like, all these new, young, inexperienced directors try something else? I don't know, because, you know, movie business is very complicated, and one day we'll hopefully have a guest on this pod that has spent a lot of time in the business that will be able to help give us more insight into that, because that's something that I really find interesting, is the whole process from pre to post production of a movie's and its life cycle. So stay tuned in the future for that, guys.
I just want to say that,
yeah,
I think that we should really cherish what, especially first, what Baby Driver did, as we talked about it being a new IP, and hopefully what Dunkirk does when it releases, because it looks absolutely stunning. Is that I feel like recently a lot of I would say the 2010s, that really franchises and cinematic universes such as the comic book movies are kind of becoming what is considered great cinema for the general public. Maybe not in terms of the critics, But yeah. if you're going to talk to your friends about a movie, you're going to probably talk about seeing Captain America, Spider-Man.
Yeah, not the Avengers. Exactly, yeah.
So I think that the popularity of a movie like Baby Driver, which is a new IP, and how people are talking about that is really important for cinema, in that people can get attached to something that is not
a franchise
that we're already familiar with. Yes.
Yeah, I agree, because we need more creative ideas in Hollywood, and I think that's been abundantly clear for the past 8 years now, is that original ideas are becoming more and more hard to come by. And while this might have been an homage, it still felt like an original idea. And so, and it probably was 75% an original idea. So, again, tip of the cap to Edgar Wright. So then let me ask you about the last two movies we talked about, War of the Planet of the Apes and Dunkirk. What are your expectations for both of these movies? I kind of talked about mine, but what are you thinking?
So the Planet of the Apes films, going back to the original, are just so iconic. The Statue of Liberty scene in the first, the original movie is, you can argue, one of the best moments in cinema with the twist of it.
It's probably the best plot twist in movie history. Probably. I put an asterisk on that.
The current films have been fantastic at recapturing what that original film did to cinema in terms of sci-fi, and focusing on very interesting ethical and social empathetic problems.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for this film. They've done a fantastic job with the other two. They've been really, really interesting films and breathtakingly beautiful and great direction and acting performances. So I'm definitely excited for it. Yeah. And on Dunkirk, growing up, I've always been a huge history buff. So Dunkirk is not something that a lot of people know about in terms of World War II history.
In America, for sure.
Yes. I would say. So Dunkirk is when the Nazi Germany was almost done with conquering France. The remnants of the French and British army combined together and ended up in Dunkirk. And this was the massive exodus of those armies to try to evacuate mainland Europe as they were defeated. So it's going to be a dark movie just based on the trailers that have been shown. And I think it's definitely going to be an homage to those older war movies of like the 50s and 60s in terms of style, especially since they're going to be showing it in many places in 40 millimeter.
70 millimeter.
I'm sorry, 70 millimeter. But I definitely think I love like Saving Private Ryan. Those types of films were some of my favorite films growing up. So I'm really looking forward to this one.
So, let me ask you this, and I am being 100% serious. This is not me joking. Christopher Nolan has made the best comic book movie. He has made the best, arguably the best space movie with Interstellar. I know some people aren't big on it. He's made arguably the best sci-fi movie with Inception. I know people are going to come at me with like forks and knives for saying that. I said arguably, because that movie is borderline perfect. He's made one of the best thrillers in Memento, or slash mystery movies, and he's made one of the best thrillers with Insomnia. He's also made one of the best movies, period, with The Prestige, which I just rewatched for the second time yesterday, and it's still amazing. Is Dunkirk going to potentially be the best war movie we've ever seen? Not to put expectations too high.
Yeah, that was going to be the first thing I said. Because Christopher Nolan is so highly touted in the cinematic world, it's hard to not go into one of his films and expecting something amazing. So if you go in, I'm worried, in expecting it to be that, if it doesn't meet your expectation, I feel like the picture of it is going to be a lot lower than what if you went in just saying, hey, I hope this is a good movie, and it maybe wasn't the best thing since Saving Private Ryan, but it is just a good movie. So I think that I'm definitely not, like, it's great to know, like, it puts trust in the film that Christopher Nolan is behind it, and everyone knows, especially with his resume, how fantastic he is at making impactful cinema. But I don't think that we should hold it to such a high standard that it's 100% going to be
movie. Obviously not. Like, you don't want to, like, just throw up a half court heave and just call money. But, like, how good do you think this movie's going to be? That's what I'm asking you, is how good do you think it's going to be?
I don't know. It's hard because which I love, is that the trailers really haven't shown a lot about what it's going to be about, like, based on what I have seen. So
can I tell you one thing, what I think first before you continue?
Sure.
Because I think that movie's going to be incredibly tense. I think that
– Oh, of course.
I expect kind of just like certain scenes in Interstellar to be on the edge of my seat. So anyways, continue. That's what I really expect.
Is it just going to be one of those movies that is going to have just tensity and this constant – like, is there going to be a reason for that constant tension? If there isn't characters you're attached to, then I feel like that tension is a lot less. Like, in Interstellar, you were attached to the main characters, which made that tension a lot more impactful. With Dunkirk, since this is a historical film, they're kind of I think that it needs to counter it. Yeah, the high tense moments are very important, but I think that unless they can do good characterization and world building first, it's going to be hard to have the audience be that invested in the characters and what is going on in the movie.
Okay, Max, you're still not really answering my question. What do you think the movie's going to be like?
I think it's going to be very tense. What I'm hoping is it's going to be something like Saving Private Ryan, where you care about Tom Hanks. That you have that very tense war movie atmosphere, but at the same time they give you a softer story on top of that that helps you get attached to characters, which makes the action scenes and the war fighting, where it's very often that the whole main cast is not going to get out of there.
So what you're saying is characters you care about, it's going to be super tense, and people are going to die. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. I agree. I'm not worried with the characters, because Christopher Nolan knows how to do characters, and he's so familiar with that world. I was watching an interview with him. He said he grew up learning about the story of Dunkirk. And he did a lot of research because, you know, that story is close to home for him. You kind of talked about War for the Planet of the Apes already. I've heard it's the best in the trilogy, which is saying a lot because the other two were very good. A lot of the characters are on both sides are very sympathetic, and you know, there's a lot of hard choices that are made by those characters, and so I'm excited to see it. I think people who haven't seen the first two might be turned off by the fact that, oh, it's a Planet of the Apes movie. But what that means today means you're getting an Oscar-worthy Andy Serkis performance, an awesome story, and phenomenal characters. So I'm going to go see it tonight, and I'm really excited for it, and I have very high expectations for it. So let's briefly talk about the legacy of all these movies, the big movies that have come out in the summer. So with Baby Driver, we already talked about, it's, you know, a very important IP that everyone seems to enjoy, and that, where do you think this ranks in the Edgar Wright movies? I think it's going to be his either second or third best movie when we look back on it.
I think that after his trilogy, I think that it's the next in line, in my opinion.
Okay.
Because that movie, those three as a package are just so unique, and I think that you have to look at them together and not just as individual films.
That's fair. Shaun of the Dead I still think is his best, and it is my personal favorite.
I agree.
Yeah. And I think it's right above Scott Pilgrim, even though I loved Scott Pilgrim. Yeah, I'd probably go Shaun of the Dead, Baby Driver, Hot Fuzz, World's End, Scott Pilgrim. That's where I'm at right now. I don't know where I'll be in 10 years. Baby Driver might even get up to number one. So Spider-Man Homecoming, you haven't seen it, so we'll also have to be a little brief on this. I do think it's top three Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. And I think it's going to be remembered as kind of like where Tom Holland started. I think Tom Holland's the next Harrison Ford.
Wow. Hot take.
Yeah.
He's got
so much energy. Sorry, you go for it.
So I think that just based on what I've been reading about the film so far, that they did a fantastic job of taking a story that everyone knows if you've seen a Spider-Man film, which most people have, and making it fresh again, which is what people wanted with this film, is it not just the same thing regurgitated that we already know, but they did a good job of making it new.
the best part, and this isn't really a spoiler, but there's no origin. There's no origin. It's not an origin story, which makes it so refreshing. Like, there's literally a line in the movie. It's like, oh, hey, how did you get your powers? And he says, I was bit by a spider. And, like, that's it. That's it. And I wish more superhero movies would handle it like that. And there's a lot, like I said before, it's as much of a high school movie as it is a Spider-Man movie. And so I think it's going to be remembered as, like I said, the kind of the diving off point for Tom Holland's career. And I think it's where everyone's going to be like, oh, so that's where he started. So now Wonder Woman. Max, have you seen Wonder Woman?
Tuesday night, excuse me, my local movie is $5 movie night. And that's when I saw Baby Driver, and I was going to go see another one after that, but the theater was packed, and I wasn't able to catch a second one, so no. But I really want to see it because I personally am a bigger DC fan than Marvel.
Same.
And I'm really excited for the Justice League movie when that comes out.
Same.
So I've been rooting for DC because it has not lived up to expectations of the fans.
It's been polarizing to say the least, and yeah, sorry, continue.
But then again, I do think that based on what I've heard, it's been fantastic, and it's bringing more confidence back to the fans that okay, yeah, they can pull this off.
Yeah, I think it'll be remembered as the movie that saved the DC universe's reputation, because that movie's a lot of fun, and it's just because I'm not going to try to throw Zack Snyder under the bus here, but thank God it wasn't directed by Zack Snyder, because Patty Jenkins did work, and I got nothing but love for her, so thank you so much, Patty. War for the Planet of the Apes, we already talked about, and then Dunkirk is, I think it'll be remembered, God, it's so tough, because you look at Christopher Nolan's resume, the Dark Knight trilogy, so let me go on what I think are his top three films. Dark Knight, number one. Inception, number two. Interstellar and The Prestige are tied for number three. And that's difficult to say because he still has, you know, Memento, Batman Begins, The Dark Knight Rises, Insomnia, and...
Any other director, most other directors would love to have directed one of those movies and have that exactly be their magnum opus.
Exactly. So I don't even know where to, like, guess where this is going to land. Because Christopher Nolan's seventh best movie is still a dang good movie. So I'm gonna guess right in the middle. I'm gonna guess it's gonna be about his fourth or fifth best, which is saying, you know, good stuff, because this movie is tight. It's only an hour and 45 minutes long, and I think that what that means is they're gonna hit the ground running, and I think they're gonna establish the characters, establish what's going on, boom, ground running, tension, oh crap, how do we get out of here? I think that's how it's gonna go down.
It's interesting because he's like known for having quite lengthy epics. Films.
Exactly.
So that's surprising that he's doing something for him that's like a short film.
Yeah. So my last question for you, Max.
Okay.
Is, let's kind of talk about the importance of summer movies. Why are movies in the summer more important than they are year round? Now, this doesn't mean that summer movies are inherently better than movies that come out in the fall, but why is it important to have such a good summer movie calendar? What do you think?
So I think it's just part of American culture. Kids are out of school. They have more time in their hands to go do things. They're bored. They want to have things to spend their time with. People are, maybe it's a really hot day outside. They want to take a break from being outside and go sit somewhere cool in an air conditioned room and have entertainment. I think that it's just part of the American experience one of the things associated with summer is going to the movies. I remember growing up seeing the Transformers movies in the summer. That was always one of the bigger splashes. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that I remember the third Star Wars came out in the summer, and I remember seeing it. I think that it's just synonymous with summer within our culture, and it has really been a time where maybe it's because of the commercial success that comes with the more available population able to see it. But because of that, it has really become the time people want to go and have more experiences at the movies.
Yeah, and I think also we kind of have to trace it back. Not obviously, yes, there's people are more available, and so it's going to make more money and whatnot. But I think we have to also trace it back in terms of just like movie history. Jaws, which is arguably the first blockbuster movie, summer blockbuster movie, came out in June. Came out June 20th. Star Wars came out May 25th. And they're now recently, Star Wars is trying to get their anthology movies, every other one, to come out in the summer. How successful that's been, I don't know, because Rogue One had to do reshoots, and so now apparently we're hearing that Han Solo is as well. So we'll see about that. But anyways, you know, we've gotten big Spider-Man movies to come out in the summer. We've gotten Man of Steel to come out in the summer. We've gotten Dark Knight movies come out in the summer. And so it's, yes, I think from the studio side, it is about money, but also from like a fan's point of view, just a cinephile that, you know, I am, you know, it's just summer always indicates that next memorable experience you're going to have in the theaters. So like, I would love to go back and see Jaws in theaters, just what that was like and just how, what impact it had on the summer. And so same with Star Wars, you know, with summer. And so it's just another like weird thing, like that, you know, you have that mental, you know, note in the back of your mind that, oh, okay, summer's coming around. There's going to be a big movie coming out this year. Like, even if you're not a big movie fan and you don't keep up with these calendars, you know, in the back of your head, oh, okay, summer means the big movie. Summer means the big thing everyone's going to talk about for the rest of the year up until the Oscars. So yeah, I think there's that as well. Again, the better summer movies we have, the better the year is, I think, just in general. I think for me, that's kind of one of the reasons why 2016, for one of many reasons, many, many, many reasons, why 2016 was tough to get through. And I think thanks to this, what we've gotten so far in 2017, they really kind of started back in March, I think, with the first of the release of great movies coming out was Logan, which came out on March 2nd. Which is, this is a different conversation, kind of, but yeah, I think, again, the better movie year we have, the better year it is in the media, for the most part, barring any presidential email scandal aside, yeah, I think just the better it is, because it's more good things for people to talk about.
I 100% agree with you, and I think that summer movies is always a memorable experience throughout my childhood, and continuing to this day, going to the movies in summer is always a experience to look forward to throughout the rest of the year. And I think that we should, in 10 years, we may look back on this, the summer of 2017, as one of the better summers that we've seen in terms of cinema in the 21st century so far.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's definitely up there. And just in terms of just the decade, I think it's